The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
Now, we're 4 days into a war between the United States and Israel and Iran, and there's a lot of uncertainty as to where it's all heading. Joining me now to tell me more is Sean Bell, former fighter pilot, military analyst and co-host of the Red Matrix podcast. Grace O'Connell Barker will speak to us. Grace lives on the Palm in Dubai, near where the hotel was hit over the weekend. But to start us off, we're joined from Beirut by Justin Salani, who is a freelance journalist there. Justin, we'll come back to you in just a moment. Sean Bell, I'll come to you on the line there. So just on the military side of this, can you give us an assessment of what you have seen, what you have noticed over the last couple of hours? In particular, we might begin with what happened in Kuwait, where we had the American fighter pilots shot down, all safe and well. They managed to eject from their aircraft. But that was a very unusual event in a situation like this.
It was, Claire. Good morning to you. Yes, as a former fighter pilot, there's always a risk that your friendly forces will shoot you down. There's always the confusion of war. If you've trained well together as a coalition, you're used to the way everything operates. But I remember in the Gulf War, we were less worried about Iraqi's air defenses and more worried when we came home about the American air defense system shooting us down. And in this particular case, you know, Kuwait, Qatar, all these countries are relatively small. They've got very small airspace. So they've got very little time to consider incoming threats. And of course, with the Americans' fighter jets operating at a similar speed to the cruise missiles that were coming out of Iran, it does appear on this fateful day that Kuwait decided to shoot first and ask questions later. Fortunately, as you said, all of the aircrew got out. They're all ejected. It's quite a, having ejected out of a military jet myself back in the day, it's quite a ride, but they all seem to be okay. And I'm sure after a couple of weeks of rest and recuperation, they'll be back in the cockpit again. But it does demonstrate just how fraught this is. And we've also heard that Qatar managed to shoot down two Iranian fighter jets. We haven't heard much from the Iranian Air Force, but they do have some very old aircraft. The aircraft that was shot down, they're called the Fencers. They're about my vintage. They're 1960s vintage. So they're not that effective, and Qatar seemed to make short work of those. But yeah, it's been an eventful 24 hours.
What's your view of what is happening here in the round? Because we hear the Americans saying, we got them before they got us. The British are saying, you don't affect regime change from the air in an assault like this. Do you understand the logic for what's happening?
The short answer is no. I think what we're seeing here is a slight divergence. What is military action is a means to an end. It's not an end in itself. So political judgments have to be made about what's the end state. Trump said he wanted to stop Iran making a nuclear weapon, and he also talked about regime change. Well, the Americans now, having rolled back the air defense systems of Iran, have now destroyed a lot of their military capability and are now clearly working their way through Iran's ability to enrich uranium. What I don't understand, though, is from an Israeli perspective, they are clearly determined to write down Iran's military capability. And those aren't necessarily coherent aims. I genuinely thought that after 24 hours of this conflict, when America and Israel have very effectively severed the heads of all of the Iranian leadership, that might have been a good chance to pause and then say, right, we've got more talks coming up. If you don't take those seriously, you've now seen what we can do. Mm-hmm. The trouble is, the longer this goes on, it's quite likely Iran won't ever win, but all it has to do is not lose. And if it just hunkers down, America's going to run out of weapons and Iran will come out of this looking as if they've beaten the American superpower.
Just going back to that stated aim of making sure that Iran doesn't have nuclear capability. And J.D. Vance was out overnight on Fox News talking about this, saying that we want to stop them building a nuclear weapon, stop their nuclear capability in the long term. Is that not what they did last summer when they had that really targeted attack on Iran?
Yeah, midnight hammer, when President Trump said afterwards, I've obliterated their ability to build nuclear weapons. The harsh reality is that was rhetoric. The reality is that there's a lot of enriched uranium that seems to have survived. And whilst you've still got that and the intent, it's a matter of time before Iran can build a nuclear weapon. I think there's something more profound here, Claire, though. If you look at what you know, Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Would they have done that had Ukraine still been a nuclear power? We persuaded Ukraine to give up nuclear weapons 30 years ago on the basis that we would guarantee their security. Well, 20 years later, Russia just moved in. There is a view in the world now that the only way to guarantee your security is through nuclear weapons, because nobody will touch you. And therefore, whatever Iran or loads of other countries in the world say, they're going to try to develop a weapon that can guarantee their security. And I think Iran is just the latest example, but I think we're going to see a lot more of this in the years to come.
Mm-hmm. And of course, in the last number of hours, we have seen this focus of Israel on southern Lebanon, and even more orders have gone out now for people to leave. 53 villages yesterday, that's increased as of this morning. I mean, Israel would connect Hezbollah, of course, to Iran, but there are two theatres of war here, and you would question whether the Americans wanted this focus on Hezbollah. We don't really know the answer to that, do we?
No, and you raise a really interesting point, Claire, that, again, it goes back to the objectives. If America was more removing the threat of Iran, is Israel using this as a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to finally re-establish a sort of a greater Israel, whether that's to do with Hezbollah in the north, but also they've mobilized another 100,000 reservists, and there's apparently a lot of activity going on in the West Bank as well. And you do wonder that under the umbrella of this American-led operation into Iran, is Israel also re-establishing itself and creating a different narrative in its own region? And I do think that's something that the President Trump, who can't afford this to continue long term, he's got the midterm elections, America run out of weapons, and the danger is America. The longer it goes on, it feels like America can't win. And therefore, there's lots more downside appearing for America than there is upside. I think it'd be really interesting to see what President Trump does over the coming days.
Sean, thank you very much for being with us. We can go to Beirut now and to Justin Solani, who is there. Justin, thank you for taking our call. It's good to get you today to find out what's been happening there. We've just been discussing how there is a major focus now on Hezbollah in southern Lebanon, also on Israeli defences in northern Israel. Can you take us through what's been happening over the last number of hours?
Yeah, absolutely. So on the early hours of or overnight Sunday and Monday, Hezbollah responded to Israeli attacks for the first time in over a year. As you may know, there was a ceasefire in November 2024, and Israel continued to attack Lebanon after that ceasefire on an almost daily basis. According to the Lebanese government and UN sources, the number of violations are in the thousands. We're talking around 10,000 or more. So after the assassination of Khamenei in Iran, Hezbollah decided to respond and attack Israeli bases. The response from Israel was to order the evacuation of around 50 towns in South Lebanon and East Lebanon, and to attack Beirut for the first time, the southern suburbs of Beirut for the first time since at least a couple of months now. Around 50 people were killed yesterday, another 145 or so wounded, according to the Lebanese Ministry of Health.
And are people on the move in Lebanon?
Yeah, it's actually sent off mass displacement. It's kind of recalling to a little over a year and a half ago when around 1 million people, 1.2 million, I believe the figure was at the time, were displaced. I think the number right now is in the tens of thousands. It's important to remember, even before these actions, there were still around 64,000 or so internally displaced people, according to the IOM, inside Lebanon. And so now we've got, I'm not sure what the exact figures are. It's kind of rapidly updating and changing, but a number of schools are receiving people. I was on a scene yesterday where I saw basically, somebody who had been displaced, rejected from entering a school. I don't know if they were at capacity or what had happened exactly. But people are really vulnerable in this moment. Mm-hmm. And they're reliving, some of their worst nightmares, some of their worst days.
And given that the bombing of the suburbs in Beirut has resumed now, I mean, does it feel safe to be where you are?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't really feel safe. I mean, until now, it seems like there have been patterns playing out. The attacks have been mostly in parts of the south, in the east, and in the southern suburbs. But of course, you know, as you might remember, in the last war, they did hit parts of Beirut. They actually hit the neighborhood that I live in on the last day of the war. And so, you know, safety is relative. We're trying to take precautions, you know, packing up on water and things of that nature. But, you know, when it comes to Israel, we're never entirely sure of what can happen.
And the Lebanese Prime Minister has ordered an immediate prohibition of Hezbollah's military activities, calling on the group to hand over its weapons. That's a very unusual call from the Lebanese Prime Minister, isn't it?
Well, there was a decision to take away, to disarm Hezbollah, and this was a decision that the government agreed on. The president announced it in his first speech in his role last year, as did the prime minister. So this was something that they had agreed on, that the army was making a plan to, and had started to do south of the Litani River. They said in January that they had completed the first phase, and we're now going into phase two. What the decision yesterday did was to say that, you know, they're now declaring Hezbollah's military and security acts illegal. The justice minister said that he would order the arrest of whoever ordered the attack from Hezbollah. So it's kind of, you know, a step up in that direction. You can say that it's kind of, you know, I've talked to different analysts that have maybe disagreed on the outcome of it, but it's a landmark decision. It's a big decision. Now the question is about implementation. Can they actually make sure that it happens?
Okay, well, Justin, thank you for talking to us from Beirut, and do take care. That's Justin Salani there, who's a freelance journalist in Beirut. We'll go to the Gulf now, and specifically to Dubai and Grace O'Connell Barker, who lives on the Palm in Dubai. Grace, hello to you.
Hi, Claire. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. So you live very near where the initial explosions over the weekend happened. What has it been like there for you then and since?
So on Saturday, I think, was when the initial missiles and drones were intercepted. We weren't really aware of what was going on at first. We were on the beach with some friends, with our kids, and the next thing we saw what looked like a kind of a puff of smoke above us and a bang. And that was essentially a missile being intercepted by the UAE's air defense system. Obviously quite a surreal experience and, you know, nothing that we had ever seen before in our lives, thankfully, and nothing that we really expected to happen. We obviously then, you know, went home, took cover and took instruction from the UAE government. Since then, you know, I think the initial shock has sort of settled in. We're kind of into day four now. And I think overall the feeling now is just one of calm and, you know, we're feeling safe here. That's the resounding feeling of the citizens and the residents of the UAE, is that we feel very calm and very safe, which I suppose is probably surprising to those of you back home listening to this and reading all the media articles. You know, you're probably thinking that we're all terrified and under house arrest, but, you know,
well,
the
some
UAE
people
has
are,
gone.
Some people are desperate to get out and to get home, particularly people who perhaps have recently moved there or who were there on holiday or who are transiting through. I mean, they are very keen to get home. There's no doubt about that.
Yes, perhaps tourists, I suppose, who aren't used to the region, but we've lived here for 11 years and, you know, we've seen the capability of the UAE government and its ability to protect its people. And that's been proven now. I mean, even the tourists who are stuck here over the weekend will have witnessed the fact that even though there's been hundreds, I mean, close to 1,000 now, I think, missiles and drones, you know, directed at us from Iran, almost every one of those has been intercepted by the UAE's air defence system. So that's the reason we're not just blindly kind of feeling safe and trusting in the government. We've seen it with our own eyes. And, you know, I think the vast majority of my friends and people who live here and even tourists that I've spoken to, I mean, my parents are currently here at the moment as well. Mm-hmm. So they would fall within that category of tourists. And they also feel completely safe.
Even though missiles are being shot down over their heads, they feel completely safe.
Yeah, well, as I say, they are being intercepted. So we haven't seen any damage directly. Yes, there was some debris from an intercepted missile that fell on the Fairmont Hotel, but I drove past the Fairmont yesterday. I mean, I think the images being portrayed in the media of, you know, huge fireballs are completely inaccurate. There was just some minor damage done to the frontage of the hotel. As I sit here right now looking out on the beach in the pond, there's people out walking, people are swimming in the sea, people are going to the mall. You know, life is very much going on as normal here. And as I said, I don't think that's just born out of blind ignorance. This is because it's been proven that the UAE government has been able to protect us. It's done an incredible job.
Okay, well, let's hope that continues. But I know for some people, they are genuinely very unsettled, and we can understand their perspective and your perspective too, Grace. Grace, thank you very much for being with us. Grace O'Connell there, Grace O'Connell Barker, who lives in Dubai. We'll have plenty more on this.
The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk.
With Aviva Insurance.